Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
Welcome to our coming of age, episode 30 of the Carpcast. How's it going?
It's fabulous, and I've just rushed to swallow the last Jaffa cake before you introduced me there.
I have some Jaffa cakes. There they are.
Yeah, and here.
If you hear some rustling during this, you'll know that Mark's got me addicted to Jaffa cakes now. And I was never even that massively into them. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, do you want me to be honest now, where I started with the Jaffa cake thing, when I first set on my own Facebook page, which is no longer there, for doing tuitions a few years back, I just used it as a bit of a gimmick, you know, saying I'll throw in the ticket, I'll throw in bait and a pack of Jaffa cakes. And it just seems to have taken off. I'm associated forever with Jaffa cakes in the cart world now, and it ain't a bad thing, I quite like them.
Yeah, you'll be very close to being able to hear more of us if you want. We're extremely close to being able to launch the Carpcast Extra. We had hoped it would be out this week. It's going to be next weekend now. Although if you so wish to subscribe early, you can do. There is a couple of teasers on the Carpcast Extra section on our website, which is still work in progress. Reese has been doing a fantastic job on it. Fitting it in amongst his other stuff. www.thecarpcast.com is where you can find it. There's a blog on there. Oh, there's going to be a blog from me and Mark that we're going to update as regular as we can. Whenever there's anything to tell you, we will tell you on there. You can just create an account and then just get like regular info from us, newsletters and stuff. Or you can support the show by subscribing at either $4.99 a month, or you can pay a one-off fee for a year of £35, which is super cheap. What's that like, about £2.50 a month or something it works out to? It saves you £60 anyway on a year. And we're going to do a monthly Carpcast Extra that you'll get for that, but it's just basically a way of supporting us and making sure we keep the weekly shows going. The weekly shows won't suffer, do not worry. If you don't wish to support us, you don't have to. We will, in fact, there'll be a few new features in this show from next week because we've got so much content for the Carpcast Extra. I've been meeting with various well-known anglers, recording new sections for the Carpcast Extra, and that in turn has given us a load of kind of extra material that we'll be putting into the weekly show as and when. So it should improve the normal show, should give more content from extremely well-known anglers. We're going to release the extra content on the probably the first Friday of every month. Thereabouts, can be on the month change, depending on what day the end of the month falls. We obviously are going to be a week late with this one. That's because I'm meeting Mr. Kevin Nash and Alan Blair this week. I'm going down to Nash HQ and have a sick opportunity to fish Kevin's Cops Lake, which is opening, I think he's opening to the general public. I mean, this is what I'm going down for, to get all the info and do a PR thing in, and I've got a couple of nights fishing on there.
Jealous.
Yeah, I mean, wow, I've fished the church 3 or 4 times over the last 10 years, and obviously that's fantastic. You know, I've had a few 40s out there, up to had that big common that's in there, it's a good 50 now. I had it at 48 quite a few years ago. But I walked past that Cops Lake so many times, and knowing the Cops Lake had, I don't know, 10 50s in it and a 60. It's like ridiculous.
And you couldn't touch it.
You couldn't touch it, no. No. But, I mean, patience has paid off. I'm going to get a chance to do a night or two on there this week. How much fishing I'm going to get, I don't know, because, we're down there working. But hopefully the weather, I mean, the weather now, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? We've continued with this mild weather from January into February, because it's going to be February the 1st on Monday when I arrive. It's ridiculous. Lakes are still fishing. I keep seeing it all over the net. I've been out fishing and caught, and I've looked at the conditions for Rayleigh and Essex, which is where I'm going next week, and it's 15 degrees on Monday, like when I arrive. What? 15 degrees. I mean, that is unreal.
Wow.
And it's staying like that till Wednesday at least. So I went fishing this week, just gone, and it was the same. It was 15 degrees when I left Blackpool. Well, at one point on the motorway going down south, it touched 17 on the van. And it was 15.5 degrees when I arrived where we were going, which is a place I unfortunately can't tell you. But we've stumbled or been put upon by a listener to the show, John Harrop, who's localish to me, sort of Blackpool and Southport. He's got onto this lake and put us onto it, myself, Roger, and some of the Nash lads. It's basically, we don't really know what's in there, but it does seem to have a few fish in there. It doesn't seem to have been fished very much over the past however long since the fish have been stocked, and they seem to have got big. you know, average size is pretty decent, sort of mid-20 to mid-30, you know, a lot of takes. Anyway, I had a bit of an epic session on there last week. Yeah, did you go fishing? Let's move on to you first.
No. I planned, but all I say is real world problems take precedent, and that was that. So I've been getting a fishy fix lately. There's been one or two social events and evenings round, local to me, which I've gone. That's always good to catch up with good old friends. And
yeah, you went to a slideshow, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been to a few. I'll glaze over them pretty quickly, but first one was a mate of mine, Mark Hogg, managed to raise over $3,000 to help this young lad to go to America for some treatment.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, well done to Mark and all those involved. Went to another one, a large one that the Angling Publications crew run each year. This year they had Mark Holmes and Ali Amidi talking. Totally missed Ali's talk. But I had a brief chat with him, you know, saw Mark Holmes talk, which, you know, informative, full of stories and big fish. And I did another one. A local syndicate, they have a meeting every year, a small affair, and Jules was talking, so it's good to catch up with Jules and a few other friends and all. So an old friend of mine called Lee, who's now selling leads as well, so thanks for the leads, Lee.
Cool. You can have a chance to fish with Julian, actually. Julian is the guest celebrity angler stroke coach at our first Carpcast coaching social, which is on Cromwell Lake, a place dear to our hearts. Cromwell Lake is near Newark, sort of Nottinghamshire, Lincolnshire border. I think we've got 5 places left on that. If anybody does want to come with us, you basically get fed all weekend. There's Fired Up Barbecues, www.firedupbarbecues.com. Fantastic barbecue outfit. They're going to come and cater for us. We can do breakfast butties on the Saturday and Sunday mornings. We can do a big barbecue on the Saturday night. We'll provide the beers and stuff. You get your fish in, you get the coach in, we'll get everyone an Indian or Chinese on the Friday night. Julian will spend some time with you, tie some rigs, we'll do the same, we'll catch some 30s and 40s. It's going to be a good weekend, it's going to be a fantastic weekend. Yeah, most of the places are gone now, there's 5 left, I think, at £250 a person. If anybody wants to come to that, fire us over a message on our Facebook page or Twitter or something, and Mark will get in touch with you. We'll take a deposit, and then you can pay it in a couple of instalments if you want. That's on the 8th to 10th of April in Cromwell.
Is.
So the weather will have warmed up. Cromwell should be fishing pretty well by then, and I mean, there's nearly 10 40s in there. I saw actually Nathan the other day said that Hardy had come out day before yesterday at £44. That's the second 40 that Cromwell's done this year already. I mean, it's not even the end of January. It's done 2 40s. I mean, that's amazing. It's everywhere's fish well this winter. We can only catch what's in front of you, and there are a shed load of 30s and 40s in Cromwell. So it's going to be a fantastic weekend.
It's going to be. I'm going to go as far as saying it's going to be an epic weekend.
Epic, yes. Yeah, we are doing some other Carpcast socials throughout the year. There's going to be one in July at Baden Hall, another one in August on Nash's Royston Lake, where we've got exclusive access before it opens. It opens in September. We've got exclusive access. It's got two lakes there, and they look they're stuffed full of fish, and there's a bit of the unknown in there as well. I think they've had fish to 39 so far, and there's a lot of fish in there. We're going to have a really good social weekend because it's my birthday. We've even got a chap, Joe, coming over from America with his missus to come to that social, so it's going to be a good one. And then we're doing Christchurch in October. If you're interested in any of those, want the dates and stuff, get in touch with Mark or myself on Facebook. Well, if you get in touch with me, I'll direct you to Mark. So maybe just get in touch with Mark.
Yeah, just send me a private message on my personal, or even on the Carpcast Facebook page, or even tweet the Carpcast Twitter account at the Carpcast, because I have control of that one. I took great delight in twitching a picture of your thumb the other day.
Yes. Yeah, I guess it's an on the net, isn't it, this?
On the net, it must be bloody painful.
On the net, it must be sore. Yes, so what happened is this epic session that I went on. So I've gone fishing with my pal Roger. We've got onto this lake that's relatively unfished. I'm sure it's been poached and stuff in the winter, but I know in the summer you're only allowed to fish days only in a small part of the lake, and it's not a very big lake anyway. But Roger had fished it the week before and had three bites, lost two, had three bites, caught two, lost one, and they were both 30. So the average size has been pretty decent. It's been fished to 40 caught already this year by John. And so I've gone down there, super mild weather, thinking happy days. I proceeded to blank for the first two nights. Roger had won the first night in the middle of the night, and all his bites in his peg had come at night. He had won the first night, and I didn't really feel like I'd fish in the first night. I didn't feel on the ball. I wasn't happy with any of my rods, any of my spots or anything. I remember the Kev Hewitt interview that we had last Carpcast, and him saying about, you know, how he'll never rest if he's not happy with a rod. So the next day I spent all day feature finding, and I was determined that I was not going to it's not going to leave me rods until I was super happy with them. I ended up probably 60-70% happy and blanked again. But that second night I was up all night photographing fish for Roger. He had one after the other. He started off with tench, and then he had at least four carp that night. So now the next morning I'm feeling pretty bad. I'm like, wow, what's going on here? Something's wrong. So I fine-tuned the spots again. There was one spot I found that was a little bit different. It was a little bit longer than the other spots, and it was a bit deeper on quite a shallow lake. So I persevered with that, made sure that was presented properly, and ended up having one of the most epic 24 hours fishing that I've ever had. I ended up having like 10 bites over the next 24 hours. It started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Bear in mind, all the Rogers takes had been in darkness. So I had one at 3 in the afternoon. I had another one straight away as soon as I put the rod back out. And then I caught consistently all night. Had no sleep whatsoever. Then Roger ended up, his action kicked in about midnight again. So, I mean, if he wasn't photographing a fish for me in the night, I was up in his peg doing his. So neither of us had any sleep. And it was crazy. Right the way through till about 10 a.m. when we were like, right, let's redo all the rods, you know, spud some more bait out, get everything right, and then switch our phones off and go to sleep for a few hours, which is what we did. And I got woken up by another bite at 3 o'clock again, which was exactly 24 hours after the first one had come. So it was a pretty epic session. I finished up with 230s, and the rest were, the smallest one was like a 15 pound common, and the rest were 20s, sort of 20 pound to 28 pound. Rogers were all 20s up to 28 pound. And a fantastic 28 pound linear he did. We're going to talk about that session in detail on one of the new features on in session. It's going to be called On the Carpcast Extra. It'll probably be on the first Carpcast cast extra, where we kind of go into detail a bit more about the session, about our thoughts and everything. So yeah, that was all great. I'd lost count of the amount of pints I had in the end. Ended up losing 3. One dropped off for no reason. One
straightened your hook.
One was in a snag. The one that dropped off for no reason was like a hook strainer. I'd used one of my hooks that I use for Ziggs, which is a really fine patterned hook, and they do open. I shouldn't have used it on a bottom rod. And it was opened a bit. So I mean, I say it fell off for no reason. It probably fell off because the hook opened a bit. But they spring back again, so you never know quite how much it had opened. But they're pretty good on, when you're using an 8-foot length of nylon, which is obviously quite springy itself. So they're really good Zig hooks, but I probably shouldn't have had it on a bottom bait rig. Well, it was a pop-up rig, but you get what I mean. It was a 8-inch braid, which is not very forgiving. But yeah, I lost one in a snag and one on, there's like a rope that goes across the lake and it had line hanging off it, and fish managed to find that. But I had a lot of fish anyway. I had over 10-12 fish, something like that, and 3 lost. So it was epic, and Roger's gone home. I'm packing up, ready to go home. Got my last rod in the water. I've reeled it in. I was using the Key cultured hook baits, which anybody knows, they've got like some sort of like attractor paste molded round them. They're like hand rolled, and on the inside is quite a hard pop up because they have paste round them. Obviously the paste like disintegrates and gives off loads of stuff into the water. The pop up bit on the inside stays quite hard, and I couldn't get it off my hair. Like, it's my last rod and I'm trying to pull it off my hair, and it's getting tough, and I've tried biting it, and anyway, somehow I've managed to pull it. It slipped, and I've got a size 7 twister to clean through the middle of my thumb up to the bend. I was like, bugger.
What did you really say? Come on.
Yeah.
I can beep it out.
I looked at it. The first thing I did was take a picture of it and send it to Roger. I was just like, what am I going to do? And when you're stuck like 3 hours from home, With a rig hanging out of your thumb, and I mean, it's embedded, it's in properly. I was just like, what do I do? And I could feel it was numb from like the shock. I was like, do I just rip it out now? I was like, oh, I just don't. I tried pulling it, and your thumbs are pretty tough, believe it or not, as I found out a bit later. So yeah, I'm like, it's not really hurting, but I've got this rig hanging out, and I've got a barra to push back, and you know, it's wet and muddy, and I was just like, oh, what am I gonna do? So I remembered in like the local village, there was I saw a pharmacy and had a doctor's next to it, so I thought I'll go there, see if they'll sort it out, or at least the pharmacy can give me anything to numb it. I can try and rip it out, because I've tried now, it's in really deep, and it's you know, the pain's setting in now, the adrenaline's like worn off. I couldn't get it out. The chemist was on an hour's lunch break, happened to be shut for an hour, and the woman sat there in the chemist eating a dinner. I'm just like, look, showing my thumb through the window. They're like, no, come back in an hour. I'm like, I don't want to sit outside the shop watching you eat for an hour. Anyway, I've ended up Googling it. There's a hospital 2 miles up the road. So I've gone up there, and 3.5 hours later, I'm still sat in the bloody waiting room. And eventually I get seen, and they're like, right, yeah, we'll give you some gas in there and we'll push it through. I was like, it's a size 7 twister. Like, they've got a square bottom on them, and like, it's up to the first point. I'm like, it's not like a round hook where you're just going to push it and it's going to, you know, it's going to go in a nice neat circle, and I could see the angle it was going in, and the point was nowhere near the skin. Like, it's in at like a 45 degree angle direct in. I'm just like, it's not going to work. And they're like, look, we can give the injection, but we don't really want to do that, let's just try and do it. So I got mega high on this gas and air. I'm blasting on it like really hard, or hippie crack as they call it.
Was it good shit?
Yeah, it was good. Like, I've had a few balloons at festivals and stuff, and it was exactly the same, except at the point of like when you're banging a balloon at a festival where you think you're going to fall over, I'm at that point, and she's going, it's like a good night out, isn't it? Carry on, keep breathing. And I'm like, wow, this is like, I'm going for the ultimate lick. And then she's just tried with these pliers, tried getting it through, and I was like, I nearly knocked her out. I was like, it's gas and air might make you high, but it does not stop pain. I can assure you, it had no pain calming things whatsoever. Anyway, they realised that it wasn't coming out. They were like, oh, this is a tough one. I was just like, look, it's square at the bottom of the hook. You're not going to be able to do it. It's just opening the, it's just going to open the hook. You're not going to get it out. So anyway, they ended up doing the injections, two injections either side of your thumb. There was claret everywhere, and the injections was worse than putting the hook in. And eventually they got it out. They poked it through, snipped the barb off, and pulled it back. I still have the hook. It's the first time I've ever seen a size 7 twister open. It has opened a little bit, but to be fair, it was pulling a 14 stone weight. So yeah, not fun. I've not put a hook through my finger since I was a kid, and when I was a kid it was much smaller hooks. Like the size 7 twister is a pretty big hook. You know, the longest shank, and they're like a square bottom. And then, you know, I've had like size 12s and stuff through me. I don't know if I've ever had a big hook. So yeah, one of the topics on the new Carpcast Extra is going to be fishing injuries. And
you've just chipped in royally.
Yeah, I already had a pretty good fishing injury story, to be fair. Which was probably slightly better. We have mentioned on this, I nearly lost a finger trying to catch the big Cheshire 50 common. But yeah, this was pretty damn painful. I was not happy. But because they didn't, like, the other option to get it out was to like anaesthetise it and then like slit it and pull the hook out of a gap. Because they didn't do that, like, ended up with like two holes in my thumb, probably like a centimetre apart from where they, you know, where it went into where they poked it back out again. And it's almost healed. Like, I'm looking at it now, only 2 days later, and I've still got two holes there, but I took the bandaging off today and I haven't got full movement and it's still a bit swollen. Like, it's like 50% bigger than my other thumb. But I think by the time I go fishing on Monday, it'll be fine. Whereas it wouldn't have been if I'd have had it cut open. So yeah, I was pretty happy in the end. It turned out all right.
Yeah, I think that session is a classic case of the carp gods giveth and the carp gods punish.
We're having some merchandise made for the Northern Angling Show. Because we've got a Carpcast stand there and we're doing our Carpcast live on the stage on Sunday. We're going to be there all weekend. Frank Warwick's appearing with us on the Sunday. But yeah, we're having some merchandise made. One of them is a t-shirt saying "The Carp Gods Giveth." And when they giveth, they also taketh. We know nothing's free in this world, is it? It's the yin and yang, the balance of life, and what goes up must come down. And I had an absolutely epic session for any time of the year, let alone January. And a fitting end was an afternoon in the hospital, I guess. It was epic, though. It's made a story. I'm quite happy about that.
Yeah, oh, I've enjoyed listening to it. In fact, while we're recording this, you're so good at telling these stories, I'm down to my last Jaffa cake.
Yeah, I've not had a chance to rustle, but. Yeah, it's cool. Let's pay some bills. We do have a sponsor that's sponsored us from the off, which is DNABaits.com. Fantastic bait company based in the east side of the Pennines up there, are they?
Yeah, they're in, I don't know where, I know they're a Yorkshire company.
Yes, they are. Seem to know their stuff because lots of people using their stuff catch lots, including Roger, who was with me this week. He uses DNA and he was using the Secret 7 or the S7 as they call it. I'd never really seen that bait close up before. DNA do like 5k deals, 10k deals, 20k deals, 50k deals, all post free, and you get a boilie of your choice, any of their flavours, the S7, the Nutter S, the SLK, the Ocean X, and very soon is the Switch coming out. You get the boilie of your choice and 3k of matching pellets for the boilie, or you can have stick mix if you don't want pellets. Now you get a tub of pop-ups or wafters, and then 250ml bait soak. The 5k deal is $59.99 post free to your door. You can order it and it will tip up 10k deal is $94.99, the 20k deal is $149.99, the 50k deal is a bit dearer. You can get extra money off that by putting in the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, and you'll get an extra 5% discount. And watching the amount of bites Roger had this week on that bait, especially when I didn't catch for the first two nights, like I was starting to, I was like, give some of that bait. obviously, we ended up having a similar amount of bites. I think I might have pipped him by one or two, actually, because I caught on the last. Oh, no, we both had one each on the last night. Yeah, so we probably finished up pretty even with bites. We certainly had over 20 fish between us. But that S7, I didn't realise it's like got seven blends of fruit in it. It's quite a, it seemed like a really nice winter bait. It's got seven different blends of fruit in it, and on a bird food type base mix, and it smelled really nice. Actually, I was quietly impressed with it. Obviously, I was using the key, and I had chunks of fish in the end, so I'm more than happy with my bait. But Roger was extremely happy with that S7, so try it out. It certainly seems like a great winter bait, because Roger used over 10 key of it plus pellet, 10 key of straight boilie, but he was grinding them all up in the ice crushers that we use, mixing it with pellet, using them in solid bags, like the big fat stick bags, he was hauling as I was. So yeah, post free deals, you can get an extra discount, 5% discount, using the code CARPCAST5. They do a ZIG deal as well, which is fantastic this time of year. It is a time of year where ZIGs can outfish bait. You get 2.5 key of spod mix, bottle of sticky sweet liquid dip, and a pack of Fox ZIG liners, and that's £30 post free, or you can go large for a fiver extra. And they do a fluoro pop-up deal as well. Again, this time of year, fluoro single hook baits and stuff very popular. You get 5 different tubs of fluoro pop-ups, and it's £25 post free. You can get all this at dnabaits.com, and you can get an extra discount if you use the code CARPCAST5. Get on it. The other sponsor is Fatfish Clothing, www.fatfishclothing.co.uk. Fantastic clothing company. I wear some of their gear. They do t-shirts, polo shirts, hoodies, waterproofs, big boy range, Mark.
Thank you.
I can hear you munching again, aren't you?
I'm getting bigger.
Yeah, they do headwear. You can support the PAG, the Predation Action Group, with their wristbands from there. They do joggers. You can buy gift cards for your partners if you want to buy them some gear. I did see on the net this week as well, Bev Clifford sporting a pink Fatfish Clothing hat. So it looks like they're doing some girly stuff as well, because the amount of girls in fishing these days, I guess. Looked very smart. She was modelling it on, I think it was on one of the Carp Talk pages, or on her page. But yeah, you can buy the DNA stuff. You can buy it direct from the website, or you can go and have a look, try it on and see it in one of the many, many stockies that are listed on fatfishclothing.co.uk. Yately Angling Stock at the Tackle Box, Stapley, Ringwood, Johnson Ross, Invicta, Harefield Tackle, Flores Tackle, Angler's Corner. There's loads, literally loads. And if you check their website, you get full A to Z of all the tackle shops around the company, where you can go and check their gear out. Have you seen anything on the net, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
There's been one or two interesting things crop up.
Yeah.
Now, we've just spoken about how a piece of Nash equipment, the Twister, can cause much pain and damage.
It twisted in my finger, all right.
It twisted and it stuck. So, good hook hold. This is a story how some Nash equipment saved lives.
Go on. I've not heard this
one.
There
we go. Now, a carp angler helped save the life of two friends following a snow blizzard off-roading accident using the fleece duvets off his Nash bedchair and sleep system. So, Craig Taylor, a site manager from Birmingham, endured a 7-hour ordeal in the Brecon Beacons, insulating two friends against snow and sub-zero temperatures after their Land Rover rolled, landing 200 feet down a sheer drop.
Wow.
So that's got to be pretty scary.
Wow. So I'm reading a quote here. If it happened another 10 times, we'd probably all be dead on every occasion. It was a miracle they survived. The Land Rover had a full roll cage, which took the brunt of it, but it still disintegrated as it rolled and threw them out. After taking a wrong turn in blizzard conditions, two Land Rovers ended up climbing a narrow cliff face edge and couldn't go any further before tragedy struck and the second vehicle rolled through the picket fence and down the sheer drop. Oh my God. Can you imagine that? They're obviously doing a bit of off-roading up there. I mean, it's the Brecon Beacons is where the SAS do all their training. I mean, there's people die up there on the SAS camps every year. So Lord knows, you know, what it's like at this time of year with, in blizzard conditions. And I mean, what if you're in the other Land Rover and you see your mate's Land Rover roll off a cliff? You're like, they're dead for sure.
Yeah, wow. You just, you know, go and get help. But, you know, 200 feet down a sheer drop, they are very, very lucky people. And again, I think the Nash duvets have just helped keep them warm, keep them alive while help comes.
7 hours they were... they were down there, so I don't know if that's because that's how long it took to rescue him or what. But I mean, it's a tip for winter wherever you go. I mean, it's very common while the weather's fairly mild. I mean, it's been sleeting here in Blackpool today. It doesn't take much for a bit of snow to come down, you know, and you can get stranded this time of year. I mean, us carp anglers, we generally have a few bits and bobs in the car, don't we? That could maybe save us. You know, there's a few things that don't come out of my van. One of them's a super big thick sleeping bag. I mean, my van's converted into a camper, so I keep that in there in case I want to stay over somewhere forever. But obviously these guys are carpers. They had the bits off the SS sleep system. It must have been off an indulgence. And it saved them. So yeah, I mean, keep some stuff in the back. I mean,
yeah, I've got a few bits I keep in the back of my car, although the main ones are to do sweet corn.
I've always got sweet corn in mine. I don't know why. There's always a couple of cans of sweet corn.
Yeah, that's just a habit from forever, I think.
Yeah, it's always handy to have...
in clean back. Underwear.
They didn't need to clean on the underwear. The Land Rover was rolling down a cliff in the Brecon Beacon. Well, I'm glad they're okay. And keep some blankets and stuff this time of year. You know, keep stuff in the car. Because you never know. I mean, I don't know why they were there 7 hours, to be fair. I'm presuming the other car saw them roll off, unless they just couldn't get to them.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd have been there sooner if it was possible.
Yep. Anything else seen on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Embryo. You know, Danny Fairbrass's brainchild. They've got another water down Cambridgeshire opening up.
Yeah.
So this is all good news. We've got exciting embryo news as we are pleased to announce the opening of another syndicate, Cawcuts Lake in Cambridge. And this is something I've read on the embryo website. Cawcuts is a mature 16-acre gravel pit located next to Histon on the outskirts of Cambridge. Those of you who regular endure the A14, which is a horrible road, yeah, we'll be familiar with the lake as you can see it from the road next to the Holiday Inn Hotel. Cawcuts hasn't been formally opened to angling for many years, but it's a pretty lake with a couple of islands, tree-lined banks and clear blue water. 15 to 20 original fish are in the lake, including a handful of 30-pound commons, and we all know how nice Cambridge 30-pound commons are. These are all very distinctive chestnut fish. Further to this, we have added 240 new fish provided by Heather Fisheries and VS Fisheries. The bulk of the stock are between 9 and 12 pounds, with 33 being between 15 and 25. It's also been otter fenced and...
I mean, we don't need to read the full press release. Basically, they've opened a new lake and it's got some fish in it. And it's otter fenced, which was kind of the purpose of the MBO project, wasn't it? You know, they will help protect,
safeguard, and ensure carp fishing for all for the future. And they're making progress, and good on them.
That's decent. I don't know if they're going to make money out of this stuff, or is it completely non-profit, the embryo stuff? But I mean, it's good that there are people out there you know, doing this otter protection. Seems to be the thing at the minute, is a lot of companies purchasing lakes and doing, you know, good stuff with them for the kids, getting newcomers into the sport. You know, the Coda do the Carp Academy as well.
That's the other thing I saw. I was I got that embryo thing from the Coda website. I did notice as well the Carp Academy is ready to accept applicants for the 2016 event.
Yep. If you are a youngster into carping between 13 and 17 listening to this, then go and have a look on the Coda website. You can get applications, fill it in there, and get it done. Talking of Coda and Nash, actually, I've seen a couple of job adverts this week. Coda have been advertising for a computer-aided designer, a CAD designer. If you want to work in the industry, check out the Coda site again. And there's been a job up at Nash as well this week, a chance to work in the industry. I know there's a lot of very keen people out there that want to work. And, you know, when a job opportunity comes up like that, you should jump on it.
Definitely. You know, before I got my job in the tackle shop, you know, I was totally sick of taxi driving. I was just ready for killing someone. I was going to become very short-tempered, which is not me. So I was looking around all these phishing websites, you know, seeing what jobs and that popped up. And now there is quite a few pop up. Unfortunately, I'm about as qualified as a Jaffa cake. So
As we've said before, like when you work in the industry, it's not quite what you think it's going to be. You know, when you work, you're working, it's a job, and generally that's 5 days a week. Quite often in the fishing industry, it can be more. I know a lot of the lads that work down in Nash, you know, they're working pretty much 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, it's an extremely demanding industry, and a lot of these companies, you know, the big names in the fishing world, they're companies started by one guy who, you know, had a creative idea many years ago, and it's still quite a cottage industry, even though it turns over, what, 1.5 billion a year, the fishing industry is worth to UK business. It's not like an Apple or a Google or anybody, you know, these are generally smallish.
Well, those family businesses in a lot of examples. But now, when you go back to how they started, you read Kevin Nash's book. You know, he started with sacks. Danny Fairbrass started by selling leads out of a bucket around the lakes he was fishing.
Yes.
And look where they are now, all of them.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's inspiration for us all.
Let's move on. What are we doing next? We've got some listeners' questions.
Ask us a question.
Yeah, we have. We've got a couple, and I've only put one in the notes, but there is one or two on our, on the Carpcast fan page, which I'm going to get up in a sec. But we'll start with one from Jonathan Phipps. He says, I'm not a zig expert, but have caught on them from clear gravel pits, fairly deep, you know, linear in Oxford. Are zigs worthwhile in coloured water, as I'm fishing a shallowish clay pit and the water clarity is poor? What do you reckon on this one?
I think, yes, certainly. I do think zigs works in coloured water. The linear lakes obviously have always been always fished well on zigs. They are pretty clear, aren't they? Yeah. I've only been a couple of times. I think a lot of it is they can still see, even in coloured water, they can still see light and dark. And the black foam, I mean, I think a lot of the reason why the black foam works is because it's kind of silhouetted against against the daylight, you know, against the sky, because generally fish are looking from inside the water and it's bright looking out. We spoke before about, you know, the perfect camouflaged colour for a t-shirt for an angler is probably like grey blue, because that's the colour that fish see when you're in the water looking out. You know, that's the main colour, unless you're going to dress as a tree and kind of only stand by a tree. But generally it's lighter coloured, so I 100%. I always use black when I use zigs. Don't know why, but it always works. And I know people have caught on various other colours, but black's my, you know, black foam is almost certainly my go-to colour for zigs. And I don't see any reason at all why they wouldn't work in coloured water. I'm toying, he says they're like shallowish. I'm toying with the idea this year of fishing kind of like a, you know, a zigger liner type thing, or a zig bug, pop straight up off the lead, like 8-9 inches, maybe 10 inches, on shallower lakes. I'm going to have a go at that this year. Because, I mean, fish don't swim around on the bottom. We spoke about this before. You know, they swim mid-water. And if you're fishing a lake 4 or 5 foot deep, and you pop something up, like, just over a foot or around a foot, it's going to be right in front of them, pretty much wherever they are. It's also only going to just be above the weed slightly. And as Ronnie De Groot mentioned in his interview, you know, the bait sits at all different levels in the water because of the weed. It hangs in the weed, and the fish don't get caught on bait in the weed. So I think it's a really, I'd even fish, like, you know, a boilie popped straight up off the lead, in those where you've got kind of lowish weed in a shallowish lake. I'm guessing there isn't loads of weed if it's coloured. Generally, when you get coloured water, there isn't a lot of weed because the light doesn't penetrate enough. But yeah, I would fish zigs for sure.
I would as well. And just imagine this scenario: bite time has come and gone. You're still there all day. What have you got to lose? If it's obvious nothing's happened on the bottom, there's no bubblers, no signs, and, you know, the odd bow wave is around, get a zig out.
Yeah, zigs are now going to be my go-to method when nothing's happening, you know, and in between bite times. If you find you're getting bites on dark or at first light or whatever, you know, and there's a consistent pattern, the rest of the time I'm going to have zigs out, I think. And obviously any lake I can use four rods. I'm pretty sure I'm almost always going to have two rods on the bottom, two on zigs. So it's the year of the zig to me, zig for me. I mean, I've got off to a flying start this year
on bottom baits.
On bottom baits, yeah. But like, every time I've caught fish in January, I've had a really good season, and it's only happened a couple of times in the last 15-20 years. But it's always started off by fishing. I mean, I got my fishing bug back end of last year when we went to Bluebell complex, and I fished on Kingfisher for a Carp TV thingy. I really got the you know, I'd been fishing. I think I caught one on Cromwell and went to Bluebell, and while I had done, you know, day ticket sessions last year, I hadn't really like wanted to be out every minute of every week, and that bug is back. And I think I'm gonna do a hell of a lot of fishing this year, and I've got off to a good start. I mean, to have had over 10 fish and a couple of 30s in January, and, you know, I'm on Nashies next week, and I'll be back on that other lake probably the week after, and I mean, it's the fishing show the week after that, but I'm going to be fishing a lot. We've got our trip booked in end of March, haven't we? We're going to St. Armand Leisure.
Well, that's going to be good.
Yeah, we'll do a Carpcast live from there, and you too can go there if you want. You can check it out on stamanleisure.com. We posted the aerial video on our page last week, actually. They've done a fantastic video from a drone of the house that you get if you book it there. It's super cheap this year. I don't think it's ever going to be this cheap again, because they've booked up quite a lot of weeks this year because of our advert on here. It's stamanleisure.com, and it's a really well established 4.5 acre spring fed lake. The fish are growing really big in there. I mean, the details we got here are off the website from 2012. I saw Christoph's got onto Facebook quite a lot recently, as you probably noticed, posting a load of his old Elstow fish up. Christoph's one of the two owners. There's Lee and Chris that own this lake. It comes with a house. It's a beautiful 200-year-old farmhouse. Got loads of facilities in there. There's 4 double bedrooms, so you could take 2 families. And plus the people that are staying on the lake. And on here it says there's like 10 fish over 40, but there's loads more than that now. There's loads of 30s in there. They stocked a load of fish in 2012 as well. Fish are packing on the lake, and the holiday comes with you know, it comes with a house, all the facilities, shower, toilet, big open plan, farmhouse, kitchen, gas oven, hub, fridge, freezer, microwave, a living room with satellite TV, big leather sofas, dining tables, six chairs. There's like a games room there. It's got table tennis and stuff in it. All facilities you need for fishing, for drying out the tackle if you're not fishing every day, or just everything you need. And you can give, if you do want to book it, there are a few weeks left for this coming year. Like, as I said, we are there at the end of March. You can contact Lee on his UK mobile 07854 857 374, or give Christoph himself a ring 07428 183 018, or have a look on the website stamandleisure.com, or you can email him stamandleisure@yahoo.co.uk. We're going. We couldn't endorse it any more than that. And we're going to catch loads of fish. I know Roger went last year or the year before, and he was catching like 10 fish a day. And he wasn't fishing the nights. He was fishing all day, every day. And he had all the big 40s while he was there as well. He had a fantastic session, as he usually does. But I'm going to do a lot of fishing this year. I've got a trip booked on Luke Moffat's Lake, Graviers, in... June, I think it is. Not the most ideal time to go there. They will have spawned, but catch one of them two big fish in there, I've been super happy.
Is that a big scarred fish still around?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it's always a 90. I think it's peaked at 99 last year, 98 or something.
I believe it did, yeah. What's the other one? Is it the brown fish, or am I mistaken?
The brown fish, yeah, which is an 80 almost always. So, I mean, even after spawning, there's an 80 pounder and a 90 pounder in there. We saw the scarred fish last year. What a sight that is.
The bank?
No, it didn't get caught, but it was about 4 foot from the bank on two separate sides of the lake. We saw it, and we were, you know, trying to stalk it and stuff, but it wasn't playing ball. But what a fish. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It was just the sight of a 90 odd pound carp in front of your face on like 6 foot from the bank. It was unreal.
That's got to look like a Labrador in the water.
Bigger. I can't describe how big it was. I just remember looking at it and looking at the width of it and going, oh, my days. It's like, I would love to see that fish in the bottom of my net. And well, we're going to have a chance, is three of us going in June. So, yeah, hopefully. But I intend on catching... all the fish from everywhere else before that. I'm looking forward to this year's fishing. Obviously, we've got all our socials. We've got the couple of French trips. We've got you know, this new lake that we've found. Not to mention everything else. It's going to be a hell of a lot. So, yeah, it's good.
It's epic, and you're off to a good start. So, are we going to continue with a couple of... I think we should have a new questions feature called Quick Questions.
Ask us a question.
fire away.
Do you think? Yeah, well, these are ones from the official Carpcast fan page, so I'll read them all out. Ian McMillan says, did you get the hook out of your finger? Or out of your little finger? Which
it's
you did.
Thumb, yes.
Yes. Robert Seeley, how many times did Jamie say FNL when they pulled the hook out?
Yeah, a few times. Like I say, I nearly clouted the nurse. When they tried doing it, I knew it wasn't coming out. Yeah, it's amazing how tough your skin is.
I've had a hook in my thumb myself, that exact same spot, and it wasn't fun.
Do you go to the hospital?
I had to. It was a size 4 stiff rigger, and it wasn't that painful at the time, so I just snipped it off, tied a new rig on, and carried on fishing, and sat there playing around till my thumb inflated, and I had to swallow a bit of pride, go in the hospital, and yeah, it wasn't nice.
No.
Pretty much the same story as yours, although I don't think I squealed like a little girl as much.
Oh, I did shout. But yeah, thanks for that question, Ian.
Yeah. Another quick one from this little list. Scott Oakley. Where is he? I'm thinking of baiting up areas on my syndicate with large amounts of particle. Scott, you're fishing Icom, it's full of bream, are you an idiot?
Whose reply is that from?
That's my reply to him.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah,
what was his? I like particle, I always put particle out.
Yeah, I remember a session on St. Ives, which is another water famed for its big bream, where you had the bright idea of filling in with 10 mil boilies.
Yeah. And
how much sleep did you get that night?
Roger did it one time on there as well. He decided to fish through him as well, and he ended up going for the all-time bream record on there from the Little Works, I think it was, one after the other. Yeah, and I see people posting up pictures of like 12 and 13 pound bream, you know, they've been hunting for him. I'm just like, wow, go and tip a bucket of particle in either Fen Drayton or St. Ives Lagoon, and you're going to catch 14 to 16 pound bream one after the other. Like, you're going to catch and catch and catch and catch. I mean, Fen Drayton, I think my biggest bream, 17, 18 pound in there, and there's definitely way bigger bream in there, but they weren't uncommon.
Well, the record comes from a lake about 200 yards from Fen.
Ferry Lagoon.
Yeah. And the other side of the Great Ouse is another lake, which I'll probably not name, because, well, it's just not well known. And that is low stock of everything, including bream. It's not a lake where they've been fed on boilies, and they're still 18, 19 pound.
Wow.
It is just so rich.
Yeah.
It's that whole area. And what makes me laugh with... especially, you know, going back to Icombe at Lincoln, you know, if you want to catch the bream in there, it is not hard. You just get a particle, get a ground bait, and just put it in with a dump truck. Because, yeah, I have seen one of the bream anglers walking down. I was chatting to him. He's holding a 2-pound maggot box in his hand, and he's pre-baiting.
Wow.
So, wow, that is going to be the biggest waste of time ever. You know, if you come down with like 2 sacks of Vitalin, that's more like it. That's going to work. Not a 2-pound bait tub.
Cool. Any more questions?
Ask us a question.
Yeah, there's... well, I'm going to get up here. It's one that I think I actually missed from the notes. From Charlie Chippy Walton. That's quite an interesting one, this. There's a reservoir close to my house, walking distance. It's known for pike fishing, and I do actually pike fish down there. There's a copper-type gravel bottom... never seen gravel like it before, and it turns the water colour a red, like reddish. It has bars, deep gullies, bays, the water rises and falls. There's no info of carp in there at all. People tend to target the pike. It's hard to locate any carp, if there is any. So where the hell do you start with a place so big and not knowing if there's any carp in there? Would you chance it with a baiting campaign to see if any carp exist, or would you leave it alone?
Sounds
like one for a bright hot summer day around spawning time.
Yeah, that's always the first way is, you know, obviously we're going to have spawning time coming up in a couple of months. Soon as the, you know, we all get out fishing proper and the weather warms up, they spawn not long afterwards. So, I mean, when you've got a lake, you're not sure if there's any carp in there, that's the best thing. Go and look for the most likely area where they'll spawn, you know, shallow bays and stuff, and have a look with your own eyes. It's quite hard to time it right on that spawning. I mean, keep your eyes on the social media, see where everywhere else is spawning, and fly down there if you can. But I mean, the first place I would look, I mean, the bigger the pit, the more likely they are to follow the winds. In my case, you know, I would just fish on the end of the wind. You don't need to worry about the other however many acres are behind the wind. Like it's that little you know, little section on the wind that you got to worry about. And I would probably, if I didn't want to go for it, if I didn't know there was any carp in there whatsoever and I wanted to find out, I would bait one area. Normally I recommend baiting all the, you know, the windward areas, but that's when I know there's fish there and I know that, you know, I want them to find bait wherever they go. But if I really didn't know if there was a single carp in there, rather than waste that kind of time and money, I would literally just bait an obvious area on the end of a southerly or southwesterly and just drop on there the odd night. You know, if I know there's a new southerly or southwesterly coming, I would get down there a couple of days before. I could fish, stick some bait out, you know, spot out half a bucket of particle or something like that, and just fish, just do the odd night on the end of the wind. And you know, if you really do keep fishing and nothing happens, maybe there's no carp in there, but there aren't many places that haven't got carp in these days. There's not many bits of water that have no carp at all in.
No, I'd say the two best equipments for that sort of thing is a pair of good walking boots and your Polaroids. And
yeah, you know, when it's warm, definitely.
Yeah, and also for your baiting up, you know, don't go putting, you know, hundreds of pounds worth of boilies in. You know, just like maize, corn, particles, stuff like that, stuff that everything's going to eat.
Yes.
Then I'd also say, if and when you do catch a carp from a lake like that, you know, it can be £40, it can be £4. It will be an achievement, and you will really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I hope you do. Let us know if you do.
Yeah, there's no better buzz than catching a fish out of that type of lake. You know, that first time your buzzer rips and you don't even know if there's a carp in there. I mean, that is a feeling as high as any high. You know, it's fantastic. So I'd say go and do it. But just start on the end of the wind. Fish when you can. Fish on the end of the wind, and you'll soon find out if there's anything in there. So, should we not mention our guest this week, have we?
Oh, I had a good catch up with an old friend of ours from Elstow, Ian Stott. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. Yeah, yeah. Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you. I'll just do a little intro to the Carpcast. Big Fish Hauler Ian Stott. Long time no see, eh?
Yeah, right. I know, mate. It's been a while. I mean, I think the last time I saw you, we was on properly Pit 2, wasn't it? When you come over and saw me when I was on...
Yeah.
Dugout over there. Dugout? Or am I on decoy?
Yeah, I think I was on the bottom knuckle. You were on... Was it DK or the decoy or the point next door?
Decoy, wasn't it? It's a decoy, mate. Yeah. Riding on them, well, them big winds had turned out, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in January, too. And
and your little parting words there. What's it going to be like when you've got the mother in your hands? Lo and behold.
Yes, I foretold the future.
Well, there you go.
If only. Yeah, I've been buying these lottery tickets, but he's not worked since.
Oh man, you need to be blindsided while you do it. You might get a little bit of luck there.
Yeah, I can.
You certainly brought me some that day, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was mad. Although when you look back, the conditions were spot on. It was perfect. It was a warm wind for January, probably what's going out my window right now.
Yes, yeah, I mean, absolutely, mate. Massive, massive window, massive.
Yeah. It wasn't.
Because I had the night before I had the mother, the wind got up really, really strong, and then it seemed to die off, and then it came raging down that booming valley, screaming, and I had this almighty flapping, and then a big bang,
yeah,
and that was the winter skin on the armour getting ripped in half.
Oh, those, when you're on that point or the decoy or any swims along that bank, you were open, you had no shelter. That wind was merciless if it got up.
There was nothing to hide from, was there? A couple of little hawthorn bushes that are about 3 foot high, and if you could get behind it.
Yeah, and all they do is blow in the wind and then rip your bivvy.
Yeah. Exactly. So may as well just front it and go in front of them, go right here, we'll be brave.
Yeah.
Or according to my wife, rather stupid.
Yeah, but you can say stupid.
It's fun though, Vance. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you feel so alive when you're out in that, though.
But one thing's for certain, you ain't going to sleep.
you might get the odd wink here and there, but not a lot.
No, I didn't, mate. Everything came up to the side of the bivvy that was getting all the brunt of the wind, mate, and I just sort of went, all you can do is sit there and drink tea all night, mate. You can't, just in case someone goes, because you've got to be on it straight away to get it pegged back down.
Yeah. I remember fishing along that, and, you know, because it's the bank, for those who don't know, it's clay. And your normal tent pegs, you know, they don't last 5 minutes when it's wet and raining. You've got to get, like, your bank sticks and stone poles to replace them just to stay where you are.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Well, it wasn't just a rain mark, it was the bloody waves of spray coming over the top of the bivvy. It was absolutely unreal.
Yeah, that's the other thing, the spray. You know, you can be bivvied up, yep, you know, 10 metres back, you're still getting sprayed.
Yeah, we had 3.5-4 foot waves coming across the lake.
Yeah. Damn good fun. But no, that session when it all came right, was it two that session? Or did you have more?
No, it was just two. I had the mother, and then a couple of 2.5-3 hours later, I had Scully at £37, I think it was.
Wow. Those two were...
And then hung around together a lot, didn't they?
Yeah, I was going to say, those two braced probably about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. And I'd had Scaly three times previous to that day, and I hadn't been a million miles away from that other one, but hey, it all came good in the end, mate.
Oh, definitely in style as well. I mean, that mother, is that still the late record, 49 plus?
Yeah,
I don't think she's gone any bigger.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's been out for the last. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think it's been out for about 3 years. It may even be longer.
No, I've was Craig Banks the last to catch you?
Was it Craig? Didn't the Hobbit have it after him?
I'm not sure. I'm not as in touch with the Lakes as I used to be. But I have heard she's not been out for a while. I've heard the usual, a few people saying that, we're saying she, it's probably a he, that the mother's no longer there. But then again, it went on the missing list before. It did like almost 4 years, then Roger Bacon caught her. Him.
Yeah.
Fish.
Yeah, I remember, mate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
It's the beauty of the place. I mean, they can do that in there, mate. I mean, it's, 40 acres? But if you take the depth into consideration, if you average that out at 10 foot over 48, well, it wouldn't be 40 acres, would it? It'd be like 120, 160 acres.
Yeah, and the average
40 foot deep, 40 acres. If you average that out at 10 foot, it's like 160 acres at 10 foot, isn't it? You've got loads of places that can hide in that depth of water, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many people did you see turn up that have one session or even just a couple of casts figure out that they can make themselves a brew by the time it takes the lead to hit bottom, and then you'd never see them again? The depth just did the heads.
Chuck the marker float off. Yeah, they turn up, chuck the marker float out, go, uh-oh, right, bye. Never to be seen again.
Yeah, there's quite a few like that. But on the other side, the lads who did stick it out were a great bunch of lads. You know, I met Jamie on there and a few others. It was always a good crack, and let's be honest, it wasn't bailiffed really either. Everyone just left to their own devices, and it was
just get on with it, mate.
Yeah.
The thing was a lot of respect going on there. I mean, if someone was sort of spending a bit of time in a swim getting things going, they'd be left to it, which.
Yeah, it's a rare thing. Ain't
any way you can get away with doing that now.
No, definitely not. Certainly not the lake next door to it.
Oh, God, no chance.
But yeah, that's another
story. No chance.
You know, it's some.
But you know what I mean? It's got. Every swim's got its own water, hasn't it? You know what I mean? It's that area, them spots. And those fish in that one move around like anything, mate. They move around with the pressure, the wind direction, whatever, mate.
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember I've did it a couple of times when I'd arrived and had the lake to myself. You'd find the fish usually in the snags or the back bay. And I've done it a few times. I set up in the sunken island. I've walked around to the back bay, chucked a few bricks in, and the fish are back up in the snags and up down the sunken island before I've got back there myself. You know, not a tactic to do when there's a few other people on the lake because they get annoyed. But
I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't think. Right.
Oh, man. Yeah. The trouble is, I mean, I've had guys fishing on the slope swim.
Yeah.
Someone in the decoy. So you've got six sets of lines going out that way, and I've sat right in the back bay, mate, and still nick one. So don't you find a well through them prison bars when you want to.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you just think of the angles your lines are going down there. And even in your decoy, what have you, you weren't fishing mega far out. I never did when I was in there anyway.
Yeah, there was areas out there in front. I mean, if you could cast out quite a way, mate, get sort of in between the slope and the headland. That was quite deep out there. There was shallower areas. I'm not going to say they were shallow because they certainly weren't, but...
Yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Monk, I mean, I've made a major, major cock-up when I was on there, mate. I had quite a lot of fish up until August. Then I went from August all the way through to January with bugger all.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't catch, mate, is because I actually started fishing for the mother. Everyone was saying you need to go long and go deep and get on them bars out there. And in the end of the day, where'd I catch you from? About 15 yards from the bank.
Yeah.
Crazy. And that's where all my other fish had come from. Like, no deep water stuff. I think the deepest I ever had a fish from out of there was 19 foot.
Yeah. You know, that's pretty similar to my experience on there, because I had all my fish. I think I caught 17 in total. We have a couple of repeats included in there.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of them was from deep water, and that was off the headland to that bar. I believe quite a few people fish it nowadays. That was around 31 foot at the time. But with
you're going out towards the I don't know if those sheds were, the factory rooms,
up until that, I think 15 foot would be my deepest, but even still 15 foot still deep on a lot of waters.
Well, compared to where I am at the minute, mate, it certainly is. Flipping heck, 15 foot, I wish.
And that's the thing we Elstow, some of the, it's not just the fishing, just some of the weird and wonderful things you saw around there. I remember being in the decoy once. You remember when they're all deep, steep margins, and three people turned up in the pipe opposite, and two of them, they're like dressed in some religious ceremonial robes or something. So I think, what the hell? Yeah, bright white. So I think, what the hell? I got my binoculars out, and I've got a third one, and they baptised him by throwing him in the lake. They could have killed the poor sod.
Yeah, I've seen the guys coming down there, two girls, like a guy going in the snags, and the girls are stripped off, and they're all in there diving around, swimming around, getting drunk and that. Man, yeah, but, you know, that's what used to go on there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah, I remember. Oh, I'm about Mitch when he was in the magic carpet and had that car dumped. Remember that one?
I think that was a little bit before my time. Is that the one that's still in the corner now?
No.
On the right-hand side?
No, the ones in the corner have been there long before me. But I mean, the way the magic carpet swim is, as you know, you're, a lot of people at that time, the levels was up, were bivvying up the top with the, you know, road, you know, another 12 foot higher than you behind you. But anyway, this is later on in the year, the levels had dropped. Mitch was fishing it, and he bivvied up on the proper swim down the bottom. And it's a good job he did, because someone pulled up in the middle of the night and dumped her, I think it was a little Fiat or Metro or something, just dumped it down the bank, and it landed nose first where most people bivvied up.
That's the grace of God, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been messy, that one.
Thankfully it wasn't, mate. Thankfully it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, Mitch caught the twin and cute fight a few other fish, so the lake paid him back. We always used to say that the lake had a spirit and it'd punish you before it let you catch one of its jewels.
Yeah. I'd say that. Totally. Absolutely. Nothing shorter than that, mate. That place absolutely battered me.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a few... plenty of scrapes. I actually gave up trying to use a bar around there at one point just because of the amount of punctures I was getting. I thought, I'm just going to cut my kit down and carry it. Although...
I did a fatal one, mate. I'd been fishing in the slopes when packed up. It started peeing down just before I'd got everything packed away, and then tried barring up the slope. I swear the lads are on pick, one could hear me swearing, because you get halfway up, it slide down, didn't even twig my feet, one load it, push it up, and then take everything up there, man. I persevered, but we got there eventually.
Yeah, I've done that once or twice myself, and it's like the old Travelator on Gladiators. Remember that,
the Travelator coming down from the car park?
No, the old TV programme Gladiators, where they're running up a track.
Yeah, I know, but I thought you were on about, because I used to, there was that bit, you come down in between pit one and pit two, that used to be called the Travelator, didn't it?
Yeah, that was nothing compared to the slope. The slope was a challenge.
But, yeah, mate.
Yeah.
It's 45 degrees of a blimmin' clay, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, you're in the slightest bit of moisture and that's it. You may as well just put ice skates on.
Yeah, it certainly felt as if you had them on, but that even actually putting them on, bloody hell.
Yeah, but oh, great times, great fun. And I've got to be honest, I had this chat with Jamie the other day, we were on about pit one, you know, even though it's totally different atmosphere over there, you know, almost everyone I did meet over there was spot on. There's only one or two who thought it was, you know, in a bit of a clique, thought carp fishing was one great big secret, but you did quite well over there as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't do too bad, mate.
You're being modest.
Didn't do too bad. I don't know, mate. It was... I don't know, it was my kind of fishing, mate. I like that, like, 70, 60, 70-yard stuff and just putting loads of bait out. And, do you know what I mean? I think when they start going, it's like, oh, God, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, the way your style of fishing over Elster was, you know, get your marker on the spot as tight as you can, three rods as tight as you can, and there's a good chance if one went, the other two weren't far behind. And with the average size of fishing there as well.
Oh man, incredible place.
Yeah.
I mean, there's better anglers than me been on there, mate, but all I can say is that pit one, they got to be the favourite two lakes I've ever fished ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I've certainly got pit two up there, but I think I have to put St Ives up there. I'll say I don't think I did pit one justice, to be honest, but then, you know, I wasn't. I don't know, I didn't seem to enjoy it as much. You know, it wasn't.
I always said pit two came close to cracking me.
Yeah.
And then when I got on pit one, it was just like, you know, I had to wait another 18 months after I come off of pit two to get onto pit one. So I went fishing another water and then go on to pit one. I just loved it on there, mate. Absolutely loved it. And I fished it hard, really hard, for 3 years. And it's just mind-blowing, mate.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. What was like Scarface in there back then?
Yeah. I had that. Well, you join in the January, don't you? I had that on the day before New Year's Eve that year in the winter. I thought I had it 47.10.
Nice. That was I saw it on the bank when Rick had it, and you know, it was a lovely fish. And I remember looking at it, thinking, "Now that has just got a massive, massive frame." I honestly expected that to go 50 sometime. You know, it just didn't seem to have the width for the frame.
Nah,
did look like it could go more, but there's another one in.
Fed too much on lettuce and cabbage all blooming most of its life, mate. If it had been on the boilies sooner, you know what I mean? But nature of the beast, that's the type of war it was, wasn't it? So
yeah, there's a lot of vegetables used on there, and despite what they were reported in Carp Talk, I remember.
I don't know what you'd say there, Mark.
Well, let's not cast aspersions.
No.
But, it did teach me a lot, you know, the effectiveness of using the vegetables. You know, the hemp and corn and bits of yellow plastic.
Yeah, if you can get them on it. If you can get them on it.
Yeah. Man, just before I phoned you up, I had a quick look. You know, just at your Facebook, through your pictures and what have you, and one thing that did remind me of, there's a couple of pictures of the big old Pit 1 slicks. I've seen slicks on, you know, a lot of other waters, but there was just something about them on there that just seemed so, I don't know what it was in that water, but you know, it's the same baits they use all over, but when they got on the spot and they were rooting up the pellets and hemp, it was like someone.
Oh yeah, it looked like a landing strip. Once the slick came up and the wind was like carrying that slick down the lake, it's just like you got the rough water either side of it, and just this black line going up the lake. It's like, aye.
Yeah.
Come in, aircraft, it's landing strips prepared.
Yeah, you just see it, like you just kick off on your spot and you'd be like, ooh, get ready, they're coming.
Yeah, I know, maybe when he got like that, I couldn't actually sit there watching. You'd get a little couple of little bleeps, they'd be like, right, I'm just gonna lay on my bed chair, and if they go, they go. It's too nerve wracking sitting there waiting for them to go.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You'd be sat there for it probably wouldn't be so long, but it'd seem like forever, and then you start getting the doubts in your head, don't you? You think, they're on my spot, they're feeding, I've got a monstrous slick coming up, why am I not going to run?
I don't know, mate. As soon as it started slicking up, you generally had a good idea. I think it was going to happen.
Yeah, it usually did. But I remember one morning, I think there's a fellow, he'd done his three nights, it was his last morning, he's got about an hour left, and then in his last hour he's had a 30 on each rod.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it could happen.
Yeah, I had it one weekend, I'd had quite a few, and I think I had about 2 hours left, and I'd had two, and then with about 5 minutes to go before I reel the rods in. I get a run. I played it for quarter of an hour, and then I had to phone the bailiff up and go, "Oh, look, I'm still here. Is it all right to take a picture?" I was that worried that I'd got over my time. It was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. They weren't that bad on there, were they?
Well, I don't know, mate. I never tried pushing it just in case.
Yeah, yeah, probably the best. You know, I don't think there was, you know, one rule for one and another rule for the rest at times, but I don't want to sound bitter. I enjoyed it on there, met some good people.
There weren't any badms on there when I was on there. It was a good laugh, mate. It was a good laugh.
Yeah.
Same bunch of guys.
Yeah. Right, I'm just going to go back to pit two. There's one thing that, well, I had a chat with Jamie a while back. With the way the onion weed was on there, I mean, we'd never even heard of a chod rig back then. Is that anything you ever used on there? Because that would have been ideal.
Oh, yeah. It'd have been spot on, mate.
It would have sat on there.
A chod rig.
Yeah. I didn't even know what it was back then.
No, I didn't. I didn't, mate, and it's something that I'd loathe to use. I know it puts fish on the bank, mate, and I've used it, and I've had quite a few fish on it up to now, but I still don't like it.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm not keen, even though, you know, my first two fish on a choddy were 35 and then star from Willington at 45.
You can't knock that then, can you really?
No, I can't. I caught a 29 from another water on it, then I lost the next five. So, yeah, kind of put me off. Everyone loses the odd one or two, but it really grinded me that. I don't like losing fish at all.
Yeah, I'm going to spite that, mate. But then I tweaked it a little bit, and not so much on the trolley, but just going to hinge stiffy, and that seemed to sort it out.
Yeah, I've been using that multi-rig most of last year, and that's doing me proud at the minute. And it's simple to tie up because I really don't do complicated stuff.
Mate. Complicated, what's that?
I like your style.
I mean, look where I was on Elstone, mate. That was just blooming a line, as simple as, you know what I mean? Nothing complicated about that.
Yeah, I think those fiddly bits going the line through your bit of tubing. But you can even buy bits of tubing now that you just thread.
I know.
Yeah,
we did the old way, bit of shrink tube.
Yeah, the old school.
Yeah, we the old school, man. What are you on about? I'm bloody ancient now.
Yeah. How old are you now, Ian, if you don't mind me asking?
52 in May.
52 in May? Wow, I'm only a scraper 40 now.
Yeah, I'm getting to be a mid-50s. Yay!
Well.
Flipping heck.
Yeah. Speaking of 50s, we've got to start talking about Welly.
Oh dear!
Yeah, what were your first? What were your first impressions of Welly when you decided to take the plunge, spend all that money on a ticket, and go for it? There's a mental stock of fish in that place. What did you think when you first clapped eyes on it?
When I first went down there, I hadn't actually joined, but I knew pretty certain that I was going to.
Yeah.
But I went round for a couple of walks early in March, and I bumped into Dave. Oh God, what's his blooming name? Dave Fuge.
Oh yeah.
And he was in a swim called Hall in the bush, and he had a mate with him, and there was like I never said hello. I'm thinking about joining. He goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. He goes, this hole in the bush, it isn't very good. As I'm looking out, I'm going, hey, well, there's one. I said, are you taking a pee out of me or what? He goes, what? I said, look at all them out there. And they were huge, but I was just like, oh. Yeah, I think we might be joining for sure. So I had another walk. Oh, mate, no, but they're all out like about 120, 130 yards. I've since learned that area was called the triangle.
Yeah.
It's a big chuck, mate, but... Yeah. And the place is off the scale now. One of the reasons I joined it, I mean, I'd had my year, just over a year on Pit 2.
Yeah.
The tiny commons, there weren't that many commons in there, and not many over, but in £20. Then the time on Pit 1, that was all mirrors.
Not a single.
I went down there with a chance of catching a big common.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I joined, but way, mate, they ain't big now, mate. They're just colossal.
Yeah, they're on another level. So, what was the stock like when you joined?
I think the biggest in there when I joined was probably about 47, 48 pounds.
Yeah.
A lot of low 40s and a lot of high 30s.
Yeah.
Now, oh dear. Oh God. I don't know. I'd say there's probably 1950s in there.
Wow. That is insane.
Yeah, I reckon there's probably 15, 45, in between 45 and 49.
Wow. I'm getting a
lot. Loads. No, you're not. It'd only be a little stick, honest. I've been told.
Yeah, it is a bit cold today.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when there was only two or three 50s in the country.
Well, I've always said, mate, you give them fish what they need, and they're going to get big. They can't help themselves. They're greedy pigs, mate. And the lake is so natural, and everything's just gone right in there over the last 18 months. They had a weed boat in a couple of years ago, and all the weed that they didn't get out dropped to the bottom. It covered all the spots up, so it was horrible.
Yeah.
So then they had a big algae boom, and that, well, mate, the oxygen levels crashed. Obviously, all the weed then died, and that all floated to the surface, all green. It stank. Had the bailiffs and a few of the lads down there, and they got as much as that off as possible. So all it's done, in effect, is exposed every natural larder in that lake. Then fish just go round, like a farmer does, rotating his crops to go into an area, feed that, then go move into another area, feed them, and just keep doing that. If you're in an area where they're happy to feed, and you're chucking boilies at them, that's the other thing. I'd say 90% of the stuff that's going in there is just boilies, mate. There's very, very little particle goes in there.
Yeah, that's got to be a good thing. We just mentioned the vegetables on pit one. If that had been old boilies, it's been... Wow.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, when I was on pit one, I was putting, I don't know, compared to some of them, it was, I'd say 80% boilies with a handful of corn, a handful of hemp, and a handful of pellets in it, mate.
Do you know,
I'd be going through 15 kilos of boilies every session when I was on Elstree.
Yeah, even though Pit 2 was low stock, John Knight showed the way. I think I was between us.
He turned up with a big bucket and his baiting stick sit on the top of the cliff and just hoof it out. And say, it's got to go in, it's got to go in.
Yeah, I remember going round from Pit 1 when he had the mother at 48 and... the colours of the fish on his capture, its back had just gone black, and it has a pale peachy, belly, and what a fish.
Ooh, yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so is
what a fight.
Yeah. Do you know that fish? I did hook that mother once and it nearly pulled me in. I was fishing locked up in the back bay and it won. It just proper flat rodded me, and I had to take a couple of steps forward and slacken the clutch off, let it go in the reeds with the intention of going to get it out, but I went for a swim and pulled my hook out of a stem instead. Later on that day, the sun's out, it's nearly 30 degrees, roasting hot, all the fish, they're out in the middle bow waving, apart from one, the mother. And she's sat in the reeds at the back, not even up, she's nearer the bottom, just sat there, sulking.
Oops. And,
yeah. But,
oops.
Such is life.
Mm-hmm.
Such is life.
Yeah, it can be cruel sometimes.
Yeah. But no, let's get back to the boilers and thing. How much boilers do you use on an average session on welly?
We're only allowed a maximum of 10K.
Really? That surprises me, that.
Sometimes, years gone by, I don't think that was helping with the algae and all that.
Yeah. How big is the lake?
35 acres.
Yeah. Oh, it's a...
average depth of 5 foot.
Yeah. That's a fair old size then, and you know, I've only been 5 foot. I'm going to assume that bird life helped itself to quite a bit of the bait as well.
It hasn't really been that bad the last... Since that algae boom a couple of years ago, obviously the lake is still weed free. There's still no weed in that lake, mate. And we've lost all the swans. At one point, there was 60 swans on there, mate. And when it wasn't too bad in the winter when the water levels came up a bit, but in the summer when the water levels dropped down, you were getting like 4, 4.5 foot. And then swans doing that bobbing thing, mate, where they just sit over the bait and they just start ducking. They're going up and down and they get your baits. Yeah, it was up pretty hard going. But it's fantastic now.
Oh, I bet it is.
There ain't that many coots on there, mate. There's a few tufties, but you're always going to get the tufties this time of year, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, any time of year, tufties like me, they just follow me around. Although it was an holiday a while back, and in a display of stuffed birds, they did have a stuffed tufty in a cabinet, and I just thought, that serves you right. But,
I think a few of them have been stuffed over the years.
I wonder what tufty tastes like.
I wouldn't have a clue.
On some lakes, it'll just taste.
Well, like... I suppose if it's been sat in the lake long enough, and it's been eaten, it's bringing peanut flavoured boilies. So it looks a bit peanutty.
Yeah. Or coconut, or oh god, imagine if I've been eating krill.
What?
Now, so
get them on the sweeties, make the proper sweet ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I reckon it'd be all right actually.
Yeah.
Duck at the end of the day, innit?
Yeah, yeah. If you run out of food, catch a tufty. Not that we condone killing and eating of wildlife, but needs must. So what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we know you had around Christmas and the New Year, you had a run of big fish. You know, had you been building up to that? How long had you been on welly? Is it a couple of years? 3 years now?
2009.
Oh, that long.
Yeah, but there's a crazy thing, Mark. At the end of the day, if I wrote out the top 20 on welly, I've probably now had 7 of them.
Yeah? Oh, still plenty to go for then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Loads to go for.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, I wrote the list out, looked at the other night and went... I don't know what it was. I mean, my first ever session down there, I was lucky enough. I found some fish. And I had my £40 common on my first ever session. You know, I made £40 6 common, along with a £37 mirror. But I was still fishing else at the same time, so I didn't bother with welly that much until the following spring. I went down and had another dabble. But I don't know what it was, man. I could catch the 40s, but I couldn't get anything... 45 plus. And then I had a couple of years where I'd catch a few sort of 42s, 43s, and then I think, what did I do? One session I'd come off Elstow, pick one, I'd had Dark Cloud at 42 summit.
Oh, that's one of my
favourite. And then I went down to Welly. Oh, mate, it was a stunning fish, just the shape of it. Oh, mate, absolute peach. And then I left there, went home, picked some bait up, went straight down to Welly, and I think it was black spot at about 35 something.
Yeah.
Then the big ghosty at 42. And then, what was it? Oh God, the linear at 46. And then Willow at 45.10. That's one of the only times where I've had the fish over 45 pounds.
Yeah, I think I read about that session in Big Carp magazine.
I think it was in there, yeah.
Yeah, I don't buy that one that often, but I do remember that. I probably bought it in because I thought, there's Stotty, he's my hero, I'm going to read that.
Ah, shut up. You Wally.
Yeah. No, it's... mate, well, you know what it's like when you get people who you... You know, whenever you speak to them, you get on like you've... not spoken to him for a long time. It's good to read about the successes. Yeah, and a slightly different thing, just to, you know, clear one or two up things. Because you know what carp fishing is like. You get all your, you know, your naysayers. What is the origin of these Wellington fish? Because they did... first time I heard about it was... You know, I was actually one of these close-season fishings on Horseshoe years back. And I got talking to Ian Poole. And we got talking as usual, carpy chat. And you know, I says to him, "Oh, where are you fishing this year then?" And he told me he just got a ticket for somewhere called Wellington Country Park. And at that point, well, I replied to him. I said, "Oh, I've not heard of that one." He just looked at me with a little smile and says, "Oh, you will." Well, it was... He was very right. I think that was a time when Steve Renyard was catching a few fish out of the, you know, mostly 30s.
Yeah. Well, I got told how true it is, mate, that they came out, somebody had a load of carp in a couple of ponds in their garden, and they came out of there. How true that is, I don't know. I know that Dave Thewage...
Yeah.
...has done a lot of research into it, but me and him don't get that much of a chance to actually talk where they've actually come from. I know they were stocked in the 70s.
Yeah.
Other than that, mate, haven't got a Scooby.
I think that just kind of lends to a bit of mystery.
Like I say, mate, I know they were stocked in the 70s. I've seen Jamie the Bailiff and... there's another baby from there, Wayne Durant, and they've got pictures of some of them fish, and they're probably 12, 13, 14 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah, because some of them are quite distinctive, like the big common you mentioned. Is that the one that's got like a little patch of irregular scales along its back?
There's so many of them in there. The big common is... The big common in there. There's three ghosties in there that are... Hang on, one, two... Yeah, there's two that are 50 pound and one that's just about touching. They've got weird scale, but obviously not twisties. But there's a couple of other commons. They've got weird patterns. If I don't know, it looks as if they've actually been hit by something when they're younger, and they, you know, when they heal.
Yeah,
they're all sort of twisted and that all over the place. But the big common in there that got some lifted it up in the net a bit weird, and its tail got damaged. Oh. That seems to be growing back, mate. Not like that. That's going to be... Oh, mate, that hadn't been out for months, mate. That could be huge.
Yeah. I'll obviously well over 50 pound then. Is it closing in on 60?
Right, hang on. Let's think. Right, the small tail common, that's about 52, 53. You've got the chestnut common, 50, 53 again. You've got the Chinese common. That's going to be epic, man. Going to be epic. That I think that's big, its biggest ever weight. It's been 54, but that hasn't been out five months, maybe 6 months. Then you've got the big common. I think that was 53 of its last capture, and that hasn't been out for a considerable amount of time as well. Now, here's the thing: when I had Scruffy Bob, that had been out in September. So in between September and November, it had put on 4.5 pound.
Wow. And you know what?
Yeah.
Like a lot of other waters, especially those, like you say, where they're shallow, they've, you know, influenced by warm winds, there's a good chance those fish, a lot of them, have been feeding and growing all the way through this winter. And
absolutely, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, not just welly, I think this spring, you know, May time, when, you know, the big females are filling up with spawn, there's going to be some colossal weights, and it wouldn't surprise me if that record goes again. Probably to the same fish, but still...
I think the spring, mate, I think Welly will... I wouldn't be surprised. I know the turtle came out not that long ago, but, I mean, he's a male fish, so their weights don't fluctuate that much, do they?
No, not as much.
But the big girls, man, with a bit of spawn in them, they're going to have a bit of spawn in them as well, aren't they? Oh, man.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some season Welly without a shadow of a deal.
Yeah, if you were... You've been to the gym to flex those muscles for picking them up for the camera.
Don't need to, mate. I work out every day at work. But they are a little bit awkward, mate, because they seem to be quite top heavy, if you know what I mean. They've got big shoulders on them and then fish down with them.
Yeah, oh, that. Have you caught the turtle?
No. I lost it.
Yeah, oh, no. Because that fish, that does look a real awkward, whole top heavy fish, but.
It's long as well, Mark. It's long as well, mate. God.
It does.
I've lost count of the amount of times. How many. I'll tell you. One, two, three. I've probably taken. Hang on, George. I think I've taken the pictures of that about 7 times.
That's teasing you.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, mate, it's paying me back because I made that monumental cock up, mate. I had a run when I was in a swim called Goose.
Yeah.
And it actually pulled the back rod rest out because I was fishing singles. And I was. The rod was straight and I was fishing slightly to the right rather than pointing straight at my lead. And the rod, well, that back rod rest come out and I hit into this thing, man. It was like in the weed bed. So I just. So I wound down as tight as I could, hung the rod up in the tree, went and got the boat, came back, went out in the boat, and there was a big wind on, mate. And I got this thing up to the surface, and it could get day the turtle, mate. Big ball of weed round the leader, big ball of weed just about a foot up from the fish's mouth. So the weed's going one way with the wind, and the carp's going the other way. I managed to get one weed bed off, and the carp went down, managed to get it back up. It's like, oh. So on the third time I got it up, I thought, I just couldn't quite get that net close enough to it. And it dived down again. There was just a big load of bubbles come up and the hook pulled.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've looked into his eyes. It's like me and him have a destiny, but hey-ho.
Yeah.
It's the only time I've lost a fish, mate. Where I put the, well, actually rowed the boat back to the shore, threw the rod in the bush, walked back to the bivvy. Lit a cigarette up, shut the bivvy door, and sat in there shaking like a leaf, going, oh, I don't believe what's just happened.
Yeah, well, losing fish is bad enough, but when you've been eye to eye with them, and you know it's a fish like that, but you have a score to settle, I'm sure you will catch that one. Your names have got to be on it sooner or later.
Well, like I say, mate, even if you did catch it, there's still loads more to go for, but. The thing with it is, I think those fish in there, at some point, have had a couple of successful spawning, mate, because there's fish in there coming through, mate. It's just like, wow, it's just madness. And I've been out in the boat in the summer, mate, when I've been playing fish and seen groups of fish, and they're only like I'd say, in between 15 and 20 pound, mate, and they've obviously spawned. They've got to have.
Yeah, you know, there's a part lake not far from me. You know, it's got a good stock of carp, but that is mainly shallow, mainly like, you know, 3 and 4 foot. You know, one end it goes slightly deeper. And there was a few years back, you know, they spawned and they must have had a right old orgy because the margins are absolutely black with fry. And, you know, shouldn't be done, obviously, but I went down there with a friend of mine who wanted a few little carp for his tank and to go onto his pond, see what he could do. It's what a lot of people were doing, to be fair. And sunk his landing net in the edge, scattered a few ground bait, well, sloppy ground bait over the top of him. You know, we're just talking as usual rubbish. He picked his net up, not really expecting anything. There's about 50 or more baby carp in it. And,
happy days.
You know, all like, you know, little proper miniature carp, you know, 4 out of 5 were probably commons. But the mirrors, you could see they were like, you know, developing in little baby linears. They were, oh, they're really cute.
Yeah, that's the thing with carp, mate. If you've got carp mirrors and commons, mate, through successive spawnings, they revert back to commons, don't they?
Yeah, they do. You know, I think it's genetic engineering that's made mirrors in the first place. But, yeah,
I know, it's only 7 monks didn't have sandy scales to scrape off when they were cooking them.
Yeah, they thought ahead, they were thinkers. But, yeah, give me a good big scaly fish any day. So, let's talk about your mama session you had before Christmas.
One of Sam's friends, well, it was one of her work colleagues, had asked Sam, what's the chance of a guestie down there? So I ummed and ahed, and then I got asked again. I went, right, I'll ask. So I asked, and it was all set up. I don't remember, was it about the 11th or 12th of December? They turned up in the afternoon of Friday. I got down there the Friday morning, and I was absolutely astounded. Mild weather.
Yeah.
A nice, steady, warm, windy wind, and it was like, oh man, I know where I'm going to go. The previous week, I went down to see Lewis Reed, who was in the Reed Swim. When I've been sat with him, I've looked up at the island and I've seen a fish crash really, really tight towards the end of the island. But I couldn't go in there that day because obviously when I walked back up, there's still someone in the hole in the bush swim. So I went back to my swim in Bramble, where I'd had Scruffy Bob from a few weeks previous. So anyway, got to the lake. There was no other person in the car park, and I just had a leisurely walk round.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd saw a carp show in the middle of the island, but there was about 8 or 9 cormorants on there. So you know what they're like when they've been turned over and dived. You're not quite sure whether it's a bird if you're not actually watching them, whether it's a bird or a fish.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And then Jamie, one of the bailiffs, turned around, he'd come down, he said, get yourself in the bush. I'm like, oh, yeah, all right, mine made up, got all set up and that. Cast about just for the day until the girls turned up, reeled them in, sort of mid-afternoon, went and picked them up for the car park. Then Leanne's got her bibby sorted out and she went in, grassing the swim next door to hole in the bush. And then we got all sorted out. I got the rods back out. And it, I don't know, about 140 yards, I reckon, I was fishing. One rod on the end of the island, one a little bit further left, and then another one left of that. Nothing happened on the Friday, but on Saturday, just after about 1 o'clock, I sort of sat in front of the rods in my bucket. Leanne had sort of sat on Sam's bed chair with her, and I just turned around and sat there, and I said, that little rod's just tightened up. And with that one was away. Quite a while later, mate, and 41 was on the bank, and then...
start.
Yeah, it was a nice start as well. and after that, yeah, bam. A day or so later, it rattled off again. It was a 33 newer.
Yeah.
But it came up to night time. I sat up and sat up and sat up. I was waiting for the wind to die down so I could get some more bait out there. And
Was it all throwing stick
or about 1 o'clock? Bombing? Nah, throwing stick, mate.
Yeah.
Throwing stick. I mean, yeah, 22 millers, mate. Just hitting that stick as hard as you can to get them out there. But I waited and waited and waited. The forecast said, I think it was about 1 o'clock, the wind had actually dropped down to nothing. But it was a little bit later now. I think I started baiting about 1:45 in the morning, something like that. That's the Friday night, isn't it? No, we're on the Saturday. Saturday, no. I'd left it. Here's what happened. Yeah, about 9 o'clock, the girls decided they're going to retire. And I sat, like I said, I was going to sit up and wait for the wind to stop. But just after 10 o'clock, I got a single bleep followed by this absolute one tone up.
Yeah.
So obviously, I was still sat up and I still had my waders on, so it wasn't too much trouble. I got out there and I'm playing this thing and it was going absolutely nuts. But even on the tight clutch at that range, mate, it was just taking line out, off, heading over a goose, and then it cut round and there's another island to the right of hole. There's a big island in front of it. There's another island up to the right of it with a little cut through channel. And it seemed to be going up that way. So, I mean, they're quite powerful rods I've got there, not them centuries.
Oh, centuries.
I had to tip right down the water and I had to see CD2s, C2Ds.
Yeah.
Like 13-foot, 3¾-inch test curves.
Oh, sounds a bit of an animal rod.
Oh, mate, you can cast a small distance with them, mate, but I play the fish a bit gingerly with them, put it that way.
Yeah.
And I was pumping this thing back, pumping it. And 1 minute, then I've managed to get it in the margin. It's gone up to my left. I've sorted it out. It's gone back down to the right. And then one point, I really had to clamp down. It was just like, you know what? I thought the amount of pressure I was putting on it, the hook's got a ball, but it didn't. Gets it in the net. And then undid the net, got the retainer, put it in the retainer, the net into the retainer, and zipped that up. Just left for 5 minutes. When you got everything sorted out, went and got Leanne because she couldn't really not see a fish that size.
Yeah.
I knew I'd got a bigger mate. I just looked at the width and I went, ooh.
You just know when you
what I that. Couldn't believe. What I couldn't believe. I mean, from the initial start, mate, when that run went off, my missus was still asleep. up to the point where I netted it. It was only once I've got it in the net, she woke up and she goes, oh, you got one. Yeah, she goes, I could hear you giggling as well, so I knew something was up.
So, yeah, mate. How big was that one?
The shoulder, 51.10. Yeah. Proper high shoulder, deep body thing, mate. Lovely fish.
Yeah. Yes, no wonder it showed total disrespect for your strong rods.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell you what, I was quite shocked at the amount they did bend as well when I was playing that one, that's for sure. Yes, we got all the pictures done with that one. We got all the weighing done, the pictures done, got back at the home. The girls retired again. I decided to stay up and wait so I could, for that winter drop, so I could get the bait out. It wasn't until about, I think I finished doing that about 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But I paid off, mate. The girls were all packed up and on their way by about 1 o'clock, 1:30. Oh, God, mate. What a battle that was. Yeah. All hell broke loose, man. All hell broke loose.
Yeah, your same spot.
I think in the space, yeah, I'd had the 41, the 33, and then the 51.
So that's a 30, a 40, a 50.
Yeah.
And then
it just, mate, over the next 2.5 hours, I had 5 runs.
Wow. In December.
I lost him, mate. I'm not convinced about two of them. One of them was definitely a pickup where the hook pulled. The other two, I'm pretty much certain that they were trailers, mate.
Yeah?
I picked one rod up, mate, after it screened off, and it was like, jadder, jadder. It was like, something really ain't right here.
Yeah, you could...
Then it was just gone. It was like, that ain't right. That couldn't have been hooked. And the other one, it was like, playing this thing, and it was going like a steam charm, going, oh, this will be all right. And then I felt a little doink, and it was like, oh, hang on a minute, you're pulling back. I couldn't feel anything going, but there was still a really heavy weight on the line.
Yeah.
So I pumped it all the way back in, and then this big old carrier bag appeared on the surface, and then round my rig was this ball, and it was a big ball, mate, like, bigger than a tennis ball, just loads of line.
Yeah.
With about 4 rigs in it.
Oh, wow. That's bizarre.
Mm. Right, yeah.
Better to have them out of the lake than in.
Yeah, certainly. And then the next two runs, one was another 41.10 and a 43 ghosty.
Wow.
And then we got the rods back out again, and then I think later on, it wasn't too late, it was probably about 9:30 out, but small tail mirror, fuck, I can't remember how big it was, 46 or 47.
Wow, so just to keep tally, we've got a 30, three low, yeah, 40s, a 46 and a 50,
yeah,
so far.
And that was it, mate, that was it. I got, yeah, packed up a blooming alarm set for 4:15 in the morning, all packed up for 4:15, and then out the door on my way to work at 5:45 in the morning.
Wow, I bet you were, were you tired at work, or were you still going on adrenaline?
I'm always tired on a Monday morning at work, mate.
Yeah, but...
You can't help but help. It is what it is, isn't it? Mate, the way I look at it is this way. If I come home on the Sunday, I'm actually driving 30 miles past where I work, so I may as well stay at the lake on the Sunday night and then just go straight to work on the Monday morning.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm saving myself, 60 miles, innit? Because I'd have to come home, go 30 miles past my work, and then 30 miles back down there in the morning.
Yeah. So,
It's economics, mate. 60 miles every week. That's a lot over the course of a year, especially if you're going every weekend.
Yeah, you're saving fuel money. I can't fault you. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so, a few weeks before that, you'd had, Scruffy Bob. Am I right in thinking that was your first over 50?
Yeah.
Then you've had this mega session, and then you've had another, yep, 50 since then.
Yeah, one in November, one in December, one in January. Madness.
That's just greedy.
I know. Yeah, but someone said, I remember a long, long time ago saying to someone, when am I going to catch my first 20? And it took a couple of years, but I eventually got it. And then your first 30, that seemed to take ages. And then when you get your first one, you get loads. And then it's the first, like, well, another, the first 40. And then you just get loads after that. And it's been like, some guys have turned up on there, mate, first cast, they've banged out of 50. It's like, do you know what? This lake is so cruel.
Yeah.
Absolutely shook. And then, you know, you catch one, then another one, then another one. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
Every lake, the lake will always pay you back, mate. Whatever lake you're on, it'll always pay you back. You just got to keep going.
Oh, you have. The persistence are always rewarded, Finn. Pit 2 was the same. How many people, there wasn't many, obviously, but there's quite a few turned up, and, you know, within a session or two, they've had the twin or the mother, where I was grinding
One guy turned up on there. Didn't he turn up, chuck a PVA bag, a boilies out, into the back bay, had the mother, carried on fishing it for another year, never had another fish?
I don't know who it was, but I have heard that before, and it doesn't surprise me, to be honest. Should have quit while he was ahead. Get the average up.
Yeah, I'm done. Right, I'm off.
Yep, pit two's easy.
Yeah, what's the problem? All these blanks going on, don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
Your luck's in, mate. Whatever way it happens.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I remember having a conversation with Paul Harris. You know, we sat on the headland. And the conversation was centred around what is the possibility of a year's blank. Because at that point, we were both nearing on 20 nights, and none of us had caught anything. And he actually says to me, the longer it takes, the more special it'll be. The next morning, he's got 3 or 4 hours left of his session. He moved round to the magic carpet swim, cast singles out at a couple of fish he'd seen show, and had the mother at 41.
Oh, happy blooming days.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw her on the bank. But yeah, you're right, keep persistence. And so are you going to go for a 50 every month now? You've got 3.
Well, hey, mate, as long as them lines are in the water, you don't know, do you?
I tell you what.
You just don't know.
You're on the right water to do it, and, well, who knows, get that turtle, get it in May at 60, if it's... Is it as hard a fighting fish as what I've heard, that one?
It's an animal, mate.
Yeah.
An absolute animal. It's a surface fighter and all, mate.
Oh, no. I'm not sure I like
them. We don't like them. I tell you what, I would not want to hook that in, well, I don't know, daylight hours? I'd sooner have it at night so you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. I mean, I think the only real surface fighter I've had was, yeah, it was a fat lady and... Nah, well, she wasn't exactly built for speed, that one.
No, she was a wallower, wasn't she?
Yeah, wallower, dog on a lead sort of thing. Although she did scrap for some people. Yeah.
That's the thing with Ellie at the minute. Now it's barren of weed, mate. The fights are absolutely off the scale.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Off the scale. The only downside of it is, mate, because they haven't got the depth of water, they're fast, mate, you know what I mean? Even them big ones, they're so fast, just like Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like 50, 60, 70 yard runs they're going, mate.
Wow. Well, if there's nothing in the way and they can't dive, they can
exactly.
Only go left, right, or away. That's
completely different. They're blooming like pit 2 and pit 1, where they used the depth to their advantage.
Yeah, that definitely. Is. Yeah, you had some, you know, sometimes on, you know, pit 2, you weren't bringing them in, you were bringing them up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what? I think I'm going to have a word with the missus. I'm going to tell her.
It's Pam Common next.
Yeah.
You're joining early.
Yeah. I'm going to tell her the bank account's been hacked. I'm going to tell her our bank account has been hacked and 1,800 quid's been stolen. By the way, I'm off to Reading.
Yeah. For a year.
Yeah.
Or two.
Yeah, or three or four.
You need to get your name on the list first, Mark.
Yeah. Is it a long list?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really long.
Yeah. Yeah, I mind saying that. It's got to be worth it. You know, I'll be honest, it is a bit out of my price range, and it's not exactly close, but Yeah, if I had the disposable income.
There's a few guys, yeah. There's a few guys, mate, that come down just as far as you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, without a doubt, if I had the disposable income for that, I would be on that list, and I would be phoning him up every year, reminding him I am on that list, and chomping at the bit to get on there. You know, I don't... well, you can't knock anyone. Anyone who can afford that ticket, they've earned it, and they deserve everything they catch from it.
Yeah, I mean, it ain't gone up a lot, really. I mean, what was it in our first year? £1,500. It's only gone up £300 in... This will be my... My eighth season.
Yeah.
Eighth? Yeah. 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 Come June, I think that'll be my eighth season.
Yeah. That's...
Yeah, because I fished it 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah, so this will be my eighth season.
Yeah. That's not...
But like I say, you could probably write off three of them, mate.
What, just through fishing other waters, or...?
No, just when my head ain't over what we were talking about earlier, mate. How do you think about it?
Yeah, we'll leave that one. But you're right, your head does need to be right when we've all had it occasionally, and because real world problems come before fishing and take priority.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm a firm believer in this, mate. I think if you've got your fishing head on, you send out a confident vibe. So does that make sense? And when I'm feeling like that, I fish really well and I tend to catch.
Yeah.
When I'm in that, like, I'm not really feeling, I'm all down and all that, I don't seem to do that well. It's weird.
Yeah, that makes hell of a lot of sense. Hell of a lot of sense. Where when I've been, you know, in the run-up to catching the lady, I was in the zone. You know, and everything just seemed to drop in right. You know, even the bait I was putting in was in a, not an unfancied swim, but not one of the top three or four.
Yeah.
And it was, even though I was doing it on the quiet, I was baiting up at, you know, like 2 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, if it was pissing it down, I'd sneak round and chuck a bit of bait in, and basically being sneaky about it.
I mean, you're not being sneaky, aren't you? You're edging your bait so to catch something, aren't you? That's what you're doing at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah, we've all got to, well, look after our investments, basically. You know, on a lit when you're after one particular big fish, then. But I know exactly what you're saying, and... On the flip side, you know, Jamie calls it the wobbles. You know, if you're doubting yourself, if you've got other concerns that are, you know, you're not thinking about your fishing, you don't fish as well. You know, I think everybody is the same. But,
yeah
when you're in that zone, definitely. When you're in that zone, 50 a month, that is impressive. But I've got to ask, did your guest Leanne catch any that session?
No, she had... On the Sunday mid-morning, there was a carp show off the end of the island, and I was actually on the phone to a mate at the time, and I'd wandered up the Wurst Swim, and a middle hanger lifted a little bit, so, well, it didn't, it actually hit a rod. She only had a drop on of about 3 inches, so I give her a shirt, and she come up, and I said, just wait, just see what happens, just leave it. And then after a few minutes, she just thought, oh, I'll reset the hanger. And I watched the hand as a hand went over to reset the hanger, mate. And it was proper shaking. It was like, oh, I wish that had gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, a one-off fishing somewhere like that. Mind, I know of her from the World Pack. She's quite a capable angler in her own right. She's got some cracking fish.
Yeah, she is, mate. She is. Yep. I think she's got a PB of 39-12 or 39-14.
Nice. Was it that, I think it was a biggie from Pit 7 at Woolpack, like a linear, if I'm right. I don't know if that was a 39, but I know she has had it. I've seen the pictures.
Wasn't she on the front cover of the one, then? Oh, Carp Talk or something. I seem to remember seeing a picture of it. I don't know whether that was that fish or not.
I don't know, possibly, but I turned 40 last year and my memory's gone already.
Yeah, mine's been gone since I was about 18, mate, trust me.
They're overrated anyway.
Trev says to me, he goes, what were we doing last Thursday? I said, boy, he goes, we've got to write down the diary. I said, I got a Scooby.
Yeah, well, when I talk about, like, a Pit 2, St Ives or Woolpack or anything, I can remember it as if it were last week. Yeah, the wife can ask me to go with a shot for four things. I come back with two of them, one of something else, and I've completely forgot what the rest was. If there's Jaffa Cakes involved, then I forget everything and just buy Jaffa Cakes.
I think it's man's selective hearing, isn't it? They hear what they want to hear when the wife's talking, especially if you're trying to watch telly at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. But well, I think it's just looking at his time. I've been recording for an hour. That's been a wonderful insight into Welly and the remarkable inhabitants and stock. So, thanks for this chatty and stop.
No worries, Mr. Watson. Been a pleasure, fella.
Cheers.
With you, and it's quite a while since I've seen him, and apart from the magazines and Carp Talk holding all these big fish up, but it's time.
Yeah, we see him a lot, don't we, in the paper with loads of big fish out of Welly. I mean, what a water that is these days.
I'm going to have to get on that waiting list and just start skimming money off the bank account and hoping the wife doesn't notice.
Yes, yeah, it's a lot of money, but wow, like nearly 20, 50 pounders, that's unreal.
Yeah,
absolutely and, unreal.
And hooking something like the turtle, which he says is a surface fighting fish.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, crazy.
Like he says, crazy. I'd want to catch that fish in the dark because if you knew you were attached to that, you would. Wow.
Yeah.
I just hope one day something like that happens to me.
I see you put a carp ain't sheep down here.
Carp and not sheep.
I have, yeah. After the few socials I've been to lately, I thought I'd better put this one in, because wearing Realtree gear to shows isn't a good idea. It's not carpy. Don't do it. We can actually see you. You are not camouflaged against a wall. In the woods, it might look good. It might look good on the bank, but not at a show. And especially if you're going to do it, if you insist on doing it, please wash them first so they don't stink of carp or bream even.
It's something that gets mentioned every show season when you go to. I mean, it's a carper's uniform, isn't it? Let's be honest. Like the, you know, what everybody jokes about when the fishing show season comes around. You know, there's people dressed as trees walking about the fishing show. You remember when the Realtree craze came out? It's probably about 10, 12 years ago. Where
I do. I jumped straight on it.
Yeah, Realtree is obviously a brand of camouflage from America. It's like a patented brand, and it came over here, and t-shirts that were Realtree were twice as much. It was like the designer clothes of carp fishing, wasn't it? And they were just twice as much as any other clothing. And but you look like a tree.
The first time I went to America in the Bass Pro Shop, there's about an acre of Realtree, all cheap, and I could have filled another suitcase.
I remember, yeah, you brought a load back, didn't you?
Yeah, I was that tree, just not at a show.
My daughter, who's 15 now, she will not go anywhere with me if I'm dressed in fishing clothing, even just normal, like my green, like cargo pants, like, you know, the sort of Nash pants that I wear that every company does, one of them in a green t-shirt and a green hoodie. My daughter does not want to be seen in public with me, so let alone going to a fishing show dressed as a tree. I mean, we have a fishing show, obviously the Northern Angling Show, which is 20 days away, it's telling me on our countdown on northernanglingshow.co.uk. scary times. You can see the Carp Cast live, where we're interviewing Frank Warwick, some of his fantastic stories. He'll be on the stage with us. You'll be able to get his new book there as well. You can get tickets, northernanglishow.co.uk, or you can pay on the door as well. I think it's a tenner on the door, and there are discounts for 12 to 16 year olds. Under 12s are free, so any younger kids, they are in for nothing. You can get the pre-sale tickets, which get you in a little bit early online. I think there's a couple of VIP packs still available as well. You can get like a set of Nash alarms, or there's a Fox cooking set, or there's all sorts of stuff on there. CC more bait package. Literally every major company is there. You can see all the new stuff. We've been speaking to people every week to see to let the marketing director of various companies tell you what they're going to have at the show, new bits to come and check out on their stand. I spoke to a guy who's synonymous in the fishing industry. He's been writing in mags for years and stuff, Mr. Pete Castle.
So I'd like to welcome Free Spirits Pete Castle to the Carpcast. How are you doing, Pete?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. It's been a while since we spoke. Probably the Northern Angling show last year, I reckon, the last time we spoke.
Yeah, last year's show, yeah. Yeah, it's a really good show. I wasn't quite sure what to expect up there, but had a really good time. Had a really, really good show.
Yeah, it was cracking, wasn't it? Especially the Saturday. You couldn't move in there. We've spread people about a little more. I think we let too many people in, like, early on the Saturday morning last year, and you couldn't move in there for a little while. But, we're fully expecting this year. Bigger and better. We sold the stands out well in advance. And what can the customers expect to see from Free Spirit this year? Have you got any new products?
Yeah, the new product for this year that we're going to be looking at is the Zig extension piece for the rods. So all through the RS and the S range. Yeah, you get like a 2-foot extension that can go between. So if you've got 12-foot rods, it turns them into 14-foot. And if you've got 13-foot rods, then you can turn them into 15-foot rods.
So obviously you can cast like a 12-foot Zig with comfort, really.
Yeah, that's the sort of main reason for setting up the development of it, was for sort of like using long Zig links and stuff like that. But there are so many other applications as well that the guys are playing about with. Marginal spots, if you've got like a long overhanging bush or something like that, and you want to get the rod out a little bit further in a slightly different line angle. People were playing about in the summer with beach caster rigs, so they're getting the rod up even higher on the beach caster stand, and there's so many applications for it. And in the right arms as well, because it creates a bigger arc on the cast. Like Hutch with his 13-foot rods making them into 15-foot, he's putting them extreme ranges even further than they normally cast. So.
Wow, what would you say is? Like if an angling average big caster can cast, you know, something like 200 meters with a lead only, what would putting an extra 2 foot on that rod do to him?
Yeah, with an extreme caster, they'll definitely be able to put it a lot further for creating a bigger arc. It depends slightly on the technique. Hutch was looking at different people with them when we were sort of mucking about with them on a field. And some people were able to put them further and some people weren't. You know, that wasn't its primary focus to build the development of that. It's actually really, really difficult engineering to be able to do that, because every test curve is different. Yeah. So each individual piece fits, you know, a 3.5 section will fit with a 3.5 rod. But the sort of tolerance is so small in it would be quite difficult for other companies to replicate without having huge problems, because we have such a low tolerance in the blanks anyway, you know. But it's definitely an interesting piece. I think people's imagination would only restrict them on what they can actually do with them, you know. Personally, I think, which we haven't got one out yet, which I'd like to see, is one on a 10-foot model, you know. So if you've got a little, because they're becoming really popular, some sort of 9 and 10-foot rods, and then you can quickly step up to a 12, you know. But that's in development at the second, so maybe out the year after.
Yeah, I like the idea of that as well, having a much shorter rod for, you know, you can use them on rivers or like the sort of the urban kind of theme at the minute. There's a lot of people using sort of short rods. And then, you know, if you need to have one of the rods further distance or something, I really like that idea. Yeah. It's quite original. Have you got new busies and stuff out, or luggage and stuff?
No. Everything that we're concentrating on at the moment is the rods, because they're so popular and the company's growing at such an alarming rate with that, that, you know, just trying to keep up with the supply and demand. We'll be displaying again the new CTX range, which has been an award-winning range this year through 2015 into 2016. We picked up several awards now for best rod. So, that's absolutely flying. It's a product that comes in at $99.99, so it appeals to a broader audience, you know. It's not just the high-end market that we're catering for, so... I've been using them myself. I like
that. Have you done much fishing?
I've done a little bit over Christmas and that. Fished in a little sort of Christmas match that I've been doing with the guys over the last sort of 12, 15 years. And I was using the little 9-foot CTX rods in that competition and had a nice 26-pound scaly, which I was chuffed with.
It's been a fantastic winter for catching fish. I think everyone's been out this year.
Yeah, no, it's been good. It's really mild, isn't it? Normally you have to sort of pick and choose like a nice mild overcast night, but it's almost like been every night's been like it, so
Yeah. And are you going to be at the show as well, I take it? People want to come and chat to you and pick your brains?
Yeah, I should be. I mean, I've got a really busy show schedule. There's sort of 4 or 5 leading up to it, but I should be there, yeah.
That's great. Well, I look forward to seeing you again. Maybe get a beer over the weekend. And thank you for talking to us on the Carpcast.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jamie. You take care, yeah.
Thanks to Pete. You know, be sure to check out their stand. Who else did I speak to this week? Ah, yeah. Somebody who supported us from the very first show was Aqua Products. Again, Aqua make luggage and bivvies and stuff. And they, you know, they were became extremely popular because they were kind of handmade stuff all in the UK, weren't they, for many, many years. And I spoke to Andy from Aqua as well.
So I'd like to welcome a person in my phone as Mr. Andy Aqua to the Carpcast. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm very well, thank you, Jamie. And yourself?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Looking forward to seeing you on the 20th and 21st of February. We're back again at Event City in Manchester. And you were somebody that supported Northern Angling Show from the very first show where you had your stuff then. Aqua is synonymous with quality, really, in bivvies and luggage. What can the consumers see this year?
Well, this year we're having a big push on our branding, and we've got a brand new stand that we're going to unveil at the Northern Angling Show. We've also got 33 new products that we plan to showcase for the very first time here in the UK and Europe.
Okay. I mean, you were one of the kind of originators of like the pram hood bivvy. I mean, I always pick, you know, whenever I see one of those style bivvies, a lot of other people copied them now, but it's like, it's an aqua bivvy. It's called an aqua bivvy, isn't it? It was where's that gone now? Is there any kind of new versions of that? I know you used to change the material regularly. I mean, what's the latest must have bivvy?
The latest pram hood style bivvy would be the M3 Compact. This year we've expanded on our Brolly range. Brollies have come back in popularity over the last few years, and we've updated our Brolly for 2016. There's also some unique new accessories to go with it, which will also be showcased at the show for the first time this year. So Brollies are probably the main concentration on large shelters, with also a big look at luggage range.
Yeah, I've always liked a Brolly, and they've come on so much since, like, the old 45-inch tilt Brollies that, you know, we used to use when we were a kid with a bit of an overwrap thrown over them. I mean, I'm looking at your the Atom bivvy and the nice camo, and you've got that Fast and Light Brolly as well, haven't you, which they look really smart, so I like them.
Yeah, the Fast and Light, basically that's been around in our range for about 6 years, and we've just this year given it a bit of a revamp and an overhaul. We've reduced the frame size down to a more reasonable level, and as I say, a few nice additions to the fixtures and furnishings on the Brolly itself. So we're really pleased. It's a popular product anyway, and I think this will just give it a bit more of a lift.
Well. Be sure to check out the Aqua stand at the Northern Angling Show. Go and say hello to Andy. He'll talk you through all the stuff. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys there. Thanks for supporting us.
Thanks ever so much, Jamie. Thank you.
So thanks to Andy. You can get your tickets from www.northernanglingshow.co.uk, or you can turn up on the day, on the Saturday and Sunday, on the 20th and 21st of February is when the show is taking place. On the Saturday and Sunday, doors open from 9. You can pay on the door, or you can buy your tickets in advance, northernanglingshow.co.uk, and you can come and see us, can't you, Mark? We're going to be there all weekend.
We are. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking. We had a stand there last year, a Carpcast stand. We'd only just launched last year, and nobody really knew what it was about. I mean, we've had hundreds of thousands of downloads since then, and you know, there's been official fan pages spring up, lots and lots of interaction. We've got listeners from all over the world, really. You know, it's Canadians, Americans, from people from Iceland, Sweden, all over the place. And by all means, come and say hello to us on the stand. We should have some merchandise by then. We're going to have hoodies, t-shirts, hats. We'll probably give you a free car sticker as well. If anybody wants to come and see us on the stand, I'm sure we can get some car stickers printed, and we will give them away. Or car stickers or normal stickers, yeah. So come and see us, come and say hello. And if you're there on the Sunday, you can see the Carpcast live, which we're going to do. And if the Carpcast live works well on the stage, we may even take it to a town near you.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Cool. Well, that's us. That's us for this week. If you do want to subscribe to the Carpcast Extra, if you want to support the show, you're very welcome. There's a couple of teasers up there at the minute. I banged one of the Ronnie DeGrota stories up there, and a Frank Warwick story up there, which is just a little taste of what the Carpcast is going to be about, the Carpcast Extra. It's just a way of supporting us. So it's £35 for a year of extra content. We're going to put articles and stuff on there. We can do loads of giveaways as well for the Carpcast Extra. Anybody who is a member of it, so, you know, we're going to release, like, you know, the social dates and stuff. We're going to basically give you a heads up on anything just for being a loyal supporter of us. And if you can support us, then we'd love you forever. www.thecarpcast.com is where you can check out our new website, which is still under construction, but it should have some content up there now, and you could just join and for free and just get up to date info on stuff that we're doing.
Yeah, and we appreciate every subscription, and we will do our best to make it worth every penny for you.
Yes, we will. It's going to fund the normal podcast. The normal podcast will become better because of it, because we've got loads of extra material for it now. We're going to introduce a few new features over the next couple of weeks. So don't worry if you're tight and don't want to spend any money. You'll still get this free every week. But yeah, we do appreciate the guys that are doing it. And we've not advertised the website yet, and there's about 15-20 people subscribed already, which we are really grateful for. And you can officially do it now. The buttons are there, the buttons are working, and there's a couple of teasers in there. And by next weekend, once I've interviewed Nashi this week, and Adam Blair again, hopefully Gary Bayes while I'm down there.
That will be a good one.
Yeah, then the Carpcast Extra will be launched, and they will never be late again, because we'll have about 6 months of content already in the bag, because I've been working hard this January. That's it from us. Goodbye from me.
Yes, good luck down Nashie's. Hopefully next time we should have some good stories of great big fish, so no pressure at all.
Don't bock me. We could be blanking. But anyway, cool. We'll see you next week.
See you next.